Welcome to the Decorations of War podcast. This is episode 51. Thank you for tuning in. Host this time around are myself, Alexa Card, the one and only Ninja Turtle.
Hello.
And a very special guest, newly elected CSMA representative, Ali Aris.
Hey, folks.
First off, some shout-outs. I want to give a shout-out to NOR Mercenary Group's New Corp, the Condemned and Convicted, particularly their U.S. Time Zone FC Sensational. I'd also like to give a shout-out to the Syndicate Competitive League, which will be having another great weekend of matches June 22nd to the 23rd.
Hey everybody, Turtle here. I want to give a shout-out to Delator for Employee of the Month within NOR Corp, and generally just being an amazing counterpart in bearing the mantle of the U.S. time zone leadership. Also want to give a shout-out to my girlfriend celebrating her birthday today, only because I think she listens to keep tabs on me every once in a while. And so yes, honey, this is actually what I'm doing.
And this is Allie, and I'd like to give a shout-out to all my Alliance mates in Of Sound Mind and Severance. Our fellow USTZ Providence bros, and also to CCP Veritas, who gave me a lot of help testing things on Sissy this weekend.
Alrighty. First off, get some things out of the way. Our sponsor, Eve Timecode, they actually are our longest-running sponsor, appropriate for the longest-running podcast, which is our new title that we'll talk about in a bit. But EveTimecode.com, buy 14 Eve Timecodes, get 1 free. Eve Timecode, where your business counts and where your business helps support the community. If you'd like to advertise in Declarations of War, just contact Alexei of Card in-game or contact us through the site. We're happy to promote your corp, site, service, whatever. Poll results. We really only had one poll because of the low number of shows due to our massive 50th spectacular, which if you haven't heard the 50th episode, it's a must listen. But the poll was, how important is the art of a ship when choosing what to fly? The overwhelming majority say somewhat important, but they still fly their doctrines. Second was not important at all. A surprising amount thought that it was only very important. Only 3 people thought it was very important and they only fly good-looking ships. I found that to be very surprising because I think that's the one that I voted. So it's probably only 2 other people.
I was definitely with the majority in the somewhat important department. I mean, it's nice when they look good, but it's the biggest thing for me is still going to be whether or not I'm going to get to blow someone else's ship up with it.
Yeah, I wrote the question and then I forgot to vote. But, yeah,
where
I don't
do you
think...
fall, Turtle?
I definitely have an appreciation for the aesthetics of it, but going as far to say as that has a influence on my ship choices, yeah, no, not so much. I see it as completely separate.
Like, I'm not going to say that I will never fly ugly-looking ships. Like, I've been in a Basilisk before. But, like, if you handed me an Oneiros and you handed me a Guardian, I would pick the Guardian because it looks better.
That makes sense. I think that's probably... I think that's closer to where I am, but I filed that under somewhat important.
I even trained up Kaldari Battleship 5 so I could fly the new Widow.
Nice.
Not because I think the Widow's a good ship, but just because the new Scorp model came out, and I was like, ha ha ha. Same thing with the Vagabond. And the
but it's
sack.
Not like, but it's not like you're like in the middle of some training thing. I mean, like you're, I guess, what you could call like the more end game of like your training and stuff. So you have the ability to throw time at this stuff because you like it. It's a little bit of a frivolous reason that like a lot of younger guys don't have.
That's true. I get to be eccentric in my old age.
I do know Fozzie was on the EVE Online forums posting something about changing command ship hulls, possibly, so that they matched their Tech 1 counterpart, Tech 1 weapons counterpart more clearly, which was a interesting snapshot of people's views on how much ship appearance matters.
And what was the prevailing winds? Because I know, for my own part, I would love to see the hulls match the Tech 1 weapon counterpart. I was surprised they didn't make that part of the change when they put in the new battlecruisers.
I'm not sure because I stopped following it when the entirety of EVE Online went down, but there were a lot of people who were saying that made sense, and then a handful of people who were like, no, my Sleipnir. Although I did see someone did a render of a Hurricane-based Sleipnir, and it looked incredibly sick. I would fly that ship.
Hell yeah, I'd fly that ship too.
Somewhere at CCP, somebody's running towards a room full of servers with a fire extinguisher.
Something like that, yeah.
EVE offline. Well, Allie, let's catch some of the viewers up on you specifically, because I think you're a rather interesting figure on the CSM right now.
Alright.
So, Allie's been put through the paces in the media. So this is not really going to be a full interview, but it will be like a mini interview segment. Allie, you ran a really interesting campaign. You were sort of the secondary Providence candidate below Coarse Blood, is that right?
Yeah, we both decided to run independently. When I ran, I didn't know he was planning a run, and he had started planning a run before I announced my candidacy. So it wasn't like we had, you know, talked about it and picked which one to go. And when we actually, when it came down to voting like a block, the message, we did something similar to the Wormholers and said, vote for whoever you want, but put Allie in Core 1 and 2.
But despite that lack of planning, you pulled out way ahead. I mean, it wasn't an even split. You were massively ahead of Coarse Blood Brothers. To what do you attribute that? What campaign strategies did you employ that he didn't?
I think it was just that I was reaching out to a very clear additional constituency. I was running, you know, he had a great platform of sort of experience and being an FC in NullSec for some time, whereas I was focusing more on people who were concerned about the new player experience, you know, people who were brave newbies. I talked to them, and people who were looking for a candidate who was to support, who was concerned about new players, keeping new players in mind. Not a bitter vet. My 1 year anniversary actually staying subscribed to EVE is coming up in June, so that's exciting.
Very cool.
But yeah, I think it was mostly the votes from outside Providence, from the various new player organizations. I did a lot more sort of social media and blogging and interviewing and stuff like that. And I think that brought in some extra publicity as well. And I just hit the streets spamming local and chatting to people. I think that might have had some small effect. Not sure whether positive or negative, but...
Well, I think positive. The sense that I got was your name recognition was way higher. Even though Coarse Blood was, say, the more experienced candidate, was running on his game knowledge, essentially. You were running on more of you the person, and less about you the character. And I think a lot of your energy was conveyed by the fact you were making all these appearances and these blog posts and really engaging people in a passionate way. People notice that kind of stuff.
They definitely do, and they expect it too. I mean, in this day and age, like the last two or three CSMs especially, it's always been like, where's the communication? Why aren't you talking to us? Blah, blah, blah. They want more and more. So, you know, definitely to fail to deliver that in this day and age is like a definite way to not get elected.
Speaking of... I'm sure Allie had to know this question was coming. You ran on a platform of increased, unprecedented, innovative communication. How's that going?
Well, I think the one sort of concrete thing that's come out of that is this Google Plus Space Hangout thing I'm doing every weekend. During EU time zone, I'm getting on Google Plus. It's been 20 o'clock every Saturday so far, except the one time I had to move it to a Sunday. It's just an informal chance to come in, chat. You were there the last time we did one. It was a lot of fun.
It was.
And so that's been my sort of casual player communication thing. I spend a lot of time on Twitter. I really like Tweetfleet. It's a lot of fun. I've been blogging some, although if you want blogging from CSM8, Ripper Tag is the blogmeister. And has been putting out quite a lot.
A lot of fun. When I was in the CSM, I found that to be probably the most enjoyable way to interact with the community. A big shout out to everyone on Tweetfleet. Like, you guys rock.
Are we going to see Ripper filling a role as the information disseminator now, just given his personality, I guess you could say? Like, is he kind of going to be the one you think that's going to pick up the mantle of really trying to speak to everybody about what's going on with the CSM?
Yeah, I think that's already what he's trying to do with his weekly CSM blog posts. I mean, I'm trying to do some of that. I'm trying to do that in a way that feels as best as possible, sort of informal, approachable. But it's always going to be sort of filtered through my perspective or things that I found particularly interesting. And I'm trying to spotlight things that aren't being picked up by Ripper or sort of as the big main community thing of the week.
Now, are you guys coordinating that back and forth? There was a lot made of having the CSM finally come together with some sort of formal, unified communication strategy. And between you, Kesper, Mike, Rippard, a lot of these forward-facing, and Mina, who posts a lot in the forums, a lot of these, like, player-facing CSMs, are you guys coordinating things behind the scenes, or is it just like, oh, well, you haven't talked about this yet, so I'll make a comment?
It's more like the latter. You know, our Skype channel we use for coordination and stuff, and some of that has included, you know, oh, I'm writing a post about this, I'm writing a post about that, oh, when's this coming up, so I need to link to it, you know, that kind of stuff. I think this is one of those things that's sort of just evolving as we go throughout our term. We're about to have our first town hall. Not this Saturday, but the Saturday after that. I will not be doing a space hangout that day because my usual time overlaps with the town hall time. So come to the town hall instead. But I will be doing space hangouts as usual next Saturday.
And one other thing I wanted to ask you about space hangouts before we move on. I really like it. I thought it was a really innovative idea. Kind of one that I wish we had in CSM 7 because it's a really intimate way to talk to the CSM. And it was a lot of fun the one time that I went. How many people are attending these, and how many people are watching them? Do you have metrics yet?
Not good ones. We had up to, I think, 8 people on at once out of 10 max. Not last week, but the week before that. Not the one you were on, but the week before that. Last week's was more sparse. The first one was obviously very sparse. There's a little thing that shows up on the interface when you're actually in the Hangout that says how many people are watching live on YouTube. And I've seen that's, you know, somewhere between 3 and 5 watching at any one time. The con one had a couple more people. Not because of the con, I think just because more people were clicking through and looking at it. I can't tell how many people are watching them on YouTube. If you go back on YouTube, you can find all of them. They're recorded and they're just posted up there a short time after they finish.
Well, they don't give you view counts or anything like that?
They don't. Actually, let me... I'll go check my channel and see if it gives a view count to just me. It doesn't put a public view count up like it does on the other YouTube videos that I post.
Well, I think that's criminal. If you guys are hearing this, make sure you make a little time to attend one of these things. Definitely check it out. It's a really cool format.
It's, regardless, it's been a lot of fun. Oh, hey, here I have view stats. I've got for last weekend's, I've got 21 views with people watching varying points of it. Interestingly, it looks like 78 people. It's not clear quite what this graph means. The one, not the one that you were on, but the one before that had 152, and the one before that 232. So it's, you know, it's a couple of, it's a number of people. It's not a boatload.
Well, Alex has spoken to this like in so many words at different times. It's, you can't talk to everybody all at once. Like, you will spend more than 24 hours a day trying to do that. So the facets of what you're interested in, like those being your communication channels, is always important. But it's surprising that the CSM doesn't have some kind of communication document together, some sort of standard, because it seems to be like one of their primary goals, yet one of the least documented.
Well, it's tough to coordinate 14-something people.
Yeah, and it's also true that if you get coordination, as you increase the amount of coordination, it slows down the response. Example of that, I wrote a Mitanni.com article, which was posted today, about the hacking minigame, because that's been sort of my pet project for the past week. I mentioned having worked on the hacking minigame in my sort of blog update shortly after last weekend, middle of last week. And I got a number of comments on that, not on the blog itself, but sort of out of band, asking me questions. And so I wrote up the hacking minigame article in response. And because I decided to publish it through Mitanni.com, because they have, I wanted to get it in front of as many eyes as possible, it took longer to go up than if I had just, you know, reread it, maybe had a friend reread it, and then stuck it up on my blog.
Well, it's a bit of a tie-dye-ish question, isn't it? Like, do we slow everything down to maintain the order? So yeah, people are getting slower queue times, but first goes first, second goes second, on and on. Or do we keep it the system where, like, you know, it's random chance that somebody might see that tweet or somebody will see that forum post, and yeah, people get answers quickly, but, you know, it's almost like randomly throwing it against the wall to see if it'll stick against someone.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a balance to be found there, and that's one of the things I want to keep working on.
Well, we definitely wish you luck with it.
Thanks.
Moving on to contract wrap-up. We have two contracts to talk about. We are currently on contract in Providence, Allie.
Oh, really?
Not in your neighborhood, unfortunately.
That's probably better for you guys.
Oh, you think so, huh?
Last time you were on a contract out to Providence, our system didn't get camped so bad.
Yeah, but other people were paying for your good fortune.
Yeah, fair enough.
In this case, we're picking on care factor a little bit.
Cool,
but,
cool.
We don't discuss ongoing. We'll talk about ones we just wrapped up. We had a POCO clear out in a wormhole. Pretty uneventful contract, I'd have to say. Guy moved into a new wormhole. He had like 9, I think it was like 8 IBCOs, and then 1 POCO from a previous resident that needed clearing out so he could set up his PI manufacturing at zero tax. And we were like, huh, alright. So we rolled in there, standard fleet set up for clearing out structures, and they were all taken down without incident, except one time when we picked up on probes a rattlesnake.
And a Noctis, and there was something else too.
The Rattler was the big one though.
Yeah, definitely. For Bill.
Unbelievably expensive.
With a 2-bill. A couple 2-bill pods too.
Yeah, so I don't know what this guy was doing, but he was in the wrong hole at the wrong time.
Well, I was there, I'll tell you. We were out in Clinked, I think, at the time. So the guys that were all based out there had like 20-some, 30-some jumps to go to get to where the wormhole inn was in HiSec. Meanwhile, I was based somewhere else that was only like 4 or 5 jumps away. So I go in ahead of time, just kind of poke my head around, and there's nothing going on, so I just start shooting the first Pokemon. I'm like, whatever, why the fuck waste time? And I'm seeing this rattlesnake and Noctis on scan, and I'm trying to get word from the employer if it's theirs or not. But it's not doing anything. It's not moving. So I'm like, all right, it's coming from the direction of a moon. I figured it was Poss Trash. And all the guys are all like really super zealous about this shit. And I'm like, all right, you know, like whatever. We got a long night ahead of us, so let's just do this. You know, I was kind of just brushing it off. And so they all get there, and I'm like, whatever, yeah, just probe it down. They find it. Noctis, a rattlesnake, and there was something else. No, Neuros, maybe? I don't remember. But we thought they were unpiloted because one of them was. It was two guys. It was two characters. One main, I'm assuming, and one alt. And the main was in the rattlesnake. The alt was in the Noctis. The third ship was unpiloted. So we stole his... I think it was a rapier, actually. We stole that ship, trying to get into the rattlesnake, realizing it's got a pod in it. So, yeah, we just ended up bringing everybody back, destroying the rattlesnake. He targeted me only because I think he had auto-target back on. Because I'm pretty sure he was AFK. So it was an interesting start to it all, because it happened like right at the beginning. So yeah, after that,
the rest of the structure is a little bit more upbeat.
Yeah, after that, it was just like hours of you know what.
But onto one uneventful contract, onto a very eventful contract. We did a cadre training operation for Valkyrie Coalition. Specifically one of their corps. Vico was an all-German alliance, but they spoke very good English, for the most part. And they were recently the target of an invasion. They managed to keep their wormhole, but they lost the fight, basically. They had to appease the invaders to get them to go. So they wanted us to come in there and teach them a little bit more about wormhole defense and give them a real hands-on, comprehensive look at armor fleets, like armor hacks, armor battleships. And this was the first contract they were working on with our new corp that just joined us. And it really worked out pretty swimmingly. The Germans were pretty much all in the one time zone, so we made sure that there was an op at 1900 every day. We also had a couple ops, you know, sort of late night using their wormhole as a base to go out into low sec and stuff. And Condemned and Convicted were using their wormholes base to suicide gank botters. Just awesome. I think the highlight of my week was... we were just a random pickup roam. I think we were just wrapping up a class about how to defend posses or something like that. Poss defense theory, poss takedown theory. Get all up in our ships. It's armor hacks, a couple tech threes, they get three logistic ships. Go into low sec, black rise, roam around. We spot a big fleet, but we lose it. And we get all disappointed, like, oh damn. We just couldn't get through the wormhole chain in time. Finally get out there, we can't find this big fleet. We're roaming one end, can't find it. Roaming the other end, can't find it. Finally, we come across a different fleet, shield battle cruisers. Gnosises, Cyclones, Hurricanes, I think they had a few Tempests and a Maelstrom in there. Very nice size fleet. Almost exactly the same number of ships as ours. They had two more than we did, and they had no logistics, whereas we had three. So you're like, ah, I think our logistics will carry that, let's go. So first thing we do is try to chase them down. We miss them at one point. But we do catch two of their stragglers and manage to take down an Oracle and a Drake. This completely evens the odds. We finally do catch up with them after they tried to juke us in one system, but we figured out which gate they were going to and landed just behind them. And it was on. Just a classic shield battlecruiser versus armor hack brawl. They had dual XL-ASB tanks on every ship. Which is pretty ridiculous. We had all passive tanks, depending on the logistic ships. So our logis were getting jammed, and they had to communicate with each other to, like, keep the cap cycle up and make sure that everybody was getting the reps that they needed. They were under heavy neuting and jamming pressure for the initial part of the fight. But at the end of the day, the dampener ships that we had, we brought in two Celestises, fairly low SP pilots, but sunk all their SP into cruisers and dampeners and armor tanking. And it really showed, because as their, like, as their Tempest and as their Maelstrom, those guys started picking up range, they weren't actually able to target the same primaries their FC was calling, because I guess their FC was in a battlecruiser in the middle of the fight. So their DPS was spread out, and it was barely effective. And we were just cutting them apart. We had good long-range tackle from a Loki and a Proteus, and we were just pinning one target down, zooming out to it, killing it, finding another one, zooming out to it again. And we took out maybe about half of the fleet, maybe a little more than half of their fleet, for by far the biggest fight of that contract and one of the best fights I've had all year.
Nice, that sounds really awesome. I do really like what the Tech 1 ships can do, all of the Celestises and stuff. We've been trying to get more of them into our fleets, to see if we can start using them to do exactly that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think the Celestis is probably the best armor ship that a low SP pilot can possibly be in. I'm really impressed with them.
Arbitrators are also pretty decent, especially if you're fighting something that's relying on, you're fighting something that's relying on either range, or you're fighting in something that can almost but not quite speed tank your opponents.
Yeah, Arbys are also very good. I hadn't really considered them. But the thing with the Arbitrator is, it's almost like, well, can't you just please train into a Zealot or a SAC? Like, it's not that much more.
I'm training for Zealot right now, and I've still got like 30, 40 days to go.
It's so worth it once you get there, though. I love it.
I know, but the Tech 2 medium lasers are going to be a killer, and then if I want to get the Hellcat, I'm going to need the Tech 2 larges, and it's just, well, there goes my training queue for the next while.
Yeah, Tech 2 larges are insane training times. But again, lasers, also worth it. Especially if you're in Providence, flying the new APOC. Mm-hmm.
Yep, and Scorch is the best thing since sliced bread. This was the platform I ran on the CSM, vote for a newbie candidate who actually is a newbie, as evidenced by my skill training queues.
I just love that newbies can actually have a big role now. Like, prior, I don't know what I would have stuck those pilots in. I guess, like, brick tank thoraxes, so they'd do, like, a little DPS, but not really that much, and they wouldn't have that great of a tank. But now, stick them in a Celestis, and the tank is pretty good for a Tech 1 cruiser, and they're actually a very valuable force multiplier. Same thing with the Arbitrator.
Mm-hmm. And you can go so far as to Brave Newbies totally dumpstered my AHAC fleet with about 6 or 7 Blackbirds. Most of the Blackbirds died by the time we cleared field, but in the time that I was calling Blackbirds that we were having trouble tackling, a Guardian, a couple of Zealots bit it, and well, that was the ISK efficiency for the day.
Yeah, sometimes you just gotta free fire on them if you can, if you have the projection to do so.
Yeah. It was some effective. It was one of those cases where the first, 15, 30 seconds of a fight really completely decides the outcome.
Mm-hmm. Those fights are some of the most frustrating.
Yeah, especially when you're the losing side and you have to evac field real quick.
Yeah. But anyway, big shout to Vico and Lucius, their liaison that we worked with. It was a lot of fun. Pretty much all of our training contracts have been a lot of fun, but this one was really great. It was packed with way more structured classes than I think we've ever had. We had like one op at 1900 for an entire week, so like 7 ops plus rooms. That was pretty cool to see that. And it was also cool that, like, previously, some training contracts, I was like the only person leading seminars. And this one, we had a lot of people leading seminars. A NOR Academy student led a seminar, guy from our new corp led a seminar, directors led a seminar, non-directors led a seminar, and I led a couple seminars. And seminars would combine, like, talking about stuff, checking fits and all that, going over theory, but also some hands-on things. And we usually capped it off with some kind of fight at the end. So it was a pretty cool experience for everybody involved. I know that they were very happy with us, and hopefully we get a call back from them sometime soon, because I'd love to work with them again.
I looked it up on Twitter, actually, because I know I tweeted about it. It was an EOS we stole from that guy.
Ah.
Yeah, it had, like, 7 links on it or something. Like 3 armor or 3 skirm or just something ridiculous.
That EOS fit.
Yeah, pretty wizard.
If we were a little bigger, I'd like to run an EOS in our fleet sometime. Just put all the Logi and Celestis in like the one squad. Super sick.
Do you use boosts on like battle cruises at all?
We could, but you know what? We don't really run battlecruisers that much, to be honest with you. Not in armor fleets, anyway.
Okay, cool.
They're just in that, like, really awkward space where they're not as fast and tanky as the hacks, but they don't have the damage projection of the battleships either.
Yeah, whereas I'm working with an alliance of mostly, you know, continuous influx of newbies, and so we end up sticking to battlecruisers' core doctrines more often than not.
I mean, they're fairly solid ships, but like NOR tends to have the SP to mostly specialize them one or the other, so we just tend to go for that. We do have pilots that come in that can't, but then we'll just stick them in appropriate support ships like the Arbitrator. So we've got like a fleet of Zealots and 1 or 2Arbitrators instead of a bunch of Harbingers or something.
Yeah, makes sense.
This week in Mercs, as we said, our mercenary group has a new corp, the Merc Contracts Mercenaries, the Condemned and Convicted. And we picked them up in our low-sec deployment out to Clinked. Just pretty much what we were doing for the whole Dust, Eve, Link, Planetary Conquest thing, which turned out to be a little bit of a letdown in my opinion. But one good part of it was we picked up these guys. Black Camper is their CEO, and he's a very common figure in the Merc Contracts channel. He's always talking. And so I was familiar with him. We ran into one another, and it turns out I was thinking about hitting one of his posses. I didn't tell him that at the time. And he was wondering what we were doing down there, and we told him about picking up a Dust Corp and going through planetary interaction and stuff. And he said, oh, well, time to move, I guess. I was like, oh, well, you know, if you can't beat him, you should join him. And he said, wait, really? Are you offering me? And I was like, yeah, why not? And I'm very happy they're here. Their killboard stats are great. Culturally, I think they're a great match for NOR. And they've been topping our killboards the past week. We have someone in the alliance that we actually have to catch up to instead of help carry, which is a very refreshing feeling.
Yeah, it's like that 1 in 100 that you get. You gotta go through like 100 before you find one good one. It's tough at the alliance level trying to recruit whole corps, and we'd had a pretty bad string before these guys, so it's good to finally get that one.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, shortly after they joined, our Dust side Pink Fluffy Bounty Hunters completely disbanded. Pretty much over the... Well, I want to say it's entirely due to the Dust build, but that's the reason that they gave for it, so I guess.
There's a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think there's a lot of confidence that CCB was going to make the fixes the community was looking for.
The good news, I think, there, though, is that they're a pretty tight-knit group, so that if it ever does get back to a point... Dust, that is, if it ever gets back to a point where it's, you know, playable in their opinion, I'm sure they'll be back, and they seem to like us, so hopefully they'll be back to us if they do come back.
I hope. But only time will tell on that one.
I mean, culturally, they were just a really a tight-knit group of guys. They had been together for so long in different games.
Yeah, Dust just didn't hold their interest anymore, unfortunately. The other, This Week in Merc's News, there is a new Merc training corp. So now Noir Academy, while being your best option, is now not your only option. The Somali Coast Guard has created the Somali Coast Guard Boot Camp. And they are primarily teaching Empire mercenary work. So if you're looking to be specifically an Empire mercenary, I would definitely give those guys a look. They're a pretty effective corp, the Somali Coast Guard, and I'm sure their training regimen is effective as well. They're getting a lot of good reviews on their crime and punishment thread. So if you're not really interested in PvPing and low-sec 0-0 wormholes, and you just want to stick to Empire, give those guys a ring. You could do worse. Eve News. Wow. We decided to throw the format out for the 50th episode, but like in 2 or 3 weeks, so much has changed.
Yeah, terrible idea.
The South is completely rewritten. Mostly due to... Well, I mean, if you look at the overarching thing, there was a thread of this, and we even had a poll about it, if you thought that HBC was going to collapse. Well, it finally did. And it did with a great flair and drama involving real-life girlfriends, fanfest, aborted supercaps. I mean, you name it, every piece of drama you could imagine was in here.
But it was basically, like, the keystone to the status quo almost kind of coming apart at the seams. Like, the dissolution of the HBC let the major players kind of go follow the winds and which way the winds are blowing them, and it's blowing them in some interesting directions. The South is an absolute powder keg right now.
Yeah, PL's also back to neutral with everyone, which changes that balance of power.
Are they neutral with everyone, or are they blue with Goonswarm?
I think
PL is blue with Goonswarm.
Okay, yeah. I thought that was temporary for all the Daryl shenanigans.
Actually, I don't know that. I don't know that for a fact. I do know for a fact that NC Dot and PL are blue.
Which that in itself is pretty interesting.
Yeah. This kind of impromptu grouping of Goon Swarm Federation, NC Dot, and PL all seeming to line up their crosshairs at Tess now that Tess doesn't really have the protection of HBC anymore. You have guys out in the LOSAC South, like Iridia land, drunken disorderly, unprovoked aggression, lost obsession. They were snapping up moons out there in LOSAC, and they're pretty much what's holding it down there, although the LOSAC out there is not so PvP friendly anymore in terms of...
Well, that's mostly due to Pandemic Legion having a chilling effect on a lot of things. PL is going through a massive and aggressive LOSAC moon campaign, including Molden Heath, including Iridia, including Genesis... Probably quite a few other regions that we could mention. They have, I assume, done the math on the new patch. They know what moons are good to get, and they're really flexing their power projection to get as many of them as possible.
Well, it's interesting you speak of power projection, too, because all the old entities are flexing their power in new ways. I mean, you see, again, Goonswarm, NC Dot, and PL all, you know, more or less effectively bluing each other temporarily to turn on Test, claiming their NOL iHub was in the spirit of good fights, but you know, they definitely have smelled blood in the water, I think, with a recent target, and they've been saying some stuff too. I mean, you know, you see alliance updates from these bigger players fairly regularly. It kind of gives you an idea of what they're up to. The one exception to that would be Test. Obviously, Test's higher leadership is not so, what's the word, coordinated at the moment.
Well, they're also newest in the chair. Test has had a lot of leadership shakeups, and guys like Goonswarm, Pandemic Legion, they've had the same leadership models and even some of the same leadership peoples for years. Test has had the same leadership model and peoples for less than months. I mean, it wouldn't even be appropriate to even say months. You could probably still measure it in days or weeks.
And I mean, their situations just changed so much, going from being under the wing of Goonswarm to head of the HBC coalition to now turtling up in Delve and being on the butt end of a bunch of, like you were saying, quote unquote, good fights.
How is all this affecting Providence? Because you guys are sort of uncomfortably next to all these giants that are starting to stomp around.
We're pretty well buffered by Ketch, actually. There's not a lot going on in Ketch. Some new U.S. time zone... a new U.S. time zone group, Squee, moved into the North Providence pipe recently and has, if you look at their killboard stats, you see a very sharp drop in efficiency when they gain Sov right next to a bunch of North Provi bored U.S. time zone PvPers. But it looks like they're still holding on, which is good for them. But all the drama down in Delve or Quirius, it's all filtered up through Ketch, and so we don't get a lot of huge fleets or whatever stomping in through there. Nulli is on a deployment nearby, so there have been some fights between us and Nulli. But the U.S. time zone side has been more dead of late. We've had a couple of Russian fleets come up through. We've had a couple of U.S. Nulli fleets. But the bulk of the action we used to be getting was Test coming out of Head GP, and of course they're gone now. So that's kind of a bummer, because we had some good fights with them.
Yeah, Test being in Head was very interesting for a lot of people. Bomber's Bar got a lot of action down there as well, although they seem to have moved on to the big fighting in Knoll and big fighting in 1-S.
Yeah, although they did show up for the Head GP Sov transfer recently. There were a number of onlining iHubs all at once, and Bomber's Bar was sitting in the system just trying to bomb everything that was trying to take Sov.
Like you do.
Yep.
Well, you do like what most other smaller entities, aka non-Sov holding entities, guys like NCDOT, well, not so much like NCDOT, because they still hold Sov, but they don't have Sov involved in the whole deal. PL, same deal. They're just happy to sit back and like ride the wave, you know? They're getting the fights out of it. Black Legion, they're getting the fights out of it. They're happy to just keep doing it. I don't think they care.
Pretty much. Although it feels like one of those things where there's been a lot of slowly escalating, oh, we're in this for good fights, we're in this for good fights. And so I'm looking to see what happens when it finally boils over into a really serious war, if it does.
Well, that's just it, isn't it? It's like two kids in a pushing match, and they just keep kind of pushing each other harder and harder, and well, at some point it's going to like break out into a fight.
Yeah, pretty much patch day is when it's not going to be about good fights anymore. This whole southern thing of them targeting Delve, it's not a coincidence. Delve is once again going to be home to some of the most valuable moons in the game. And like you said, blood in the water, a newly vulnerable alliance sitting on top of massive wealth.
Battleship rebalance, meaning everyone wants to take out their new fleet doctor and smash it into somebody else.
Yeah, I think things are going to really get serious in about 2 days from now. And you're going to see things go from good fights to the fuck out.
Pretty much. It'll be interesting to see what the new sort of stable is, if a new stable emerges after this. Because we had... Yeah, for long, once the route of A was over with, it was pretty much Goons, HBC, and then there was the takeover of Solar Space going on. But there wasn't a huge conflict in NullSec that was happening for quite a while, or at least nothing that felt like a big deal.
Yeah, Solar is definitely, I think, going to have a big hand to play in this. At some point they're going to wake up in the middle of all this and throw their cards on the table. But yeah, it's definitely finding the new normal, finding the new balance of power and what's going on. It'll be interesting too, because Delve will be valuable, but are Goons really at the point where they want to be soaking up more Sov? You know, where are they going to give that not necessary Sov away, and to whom? And because, yep. You know,
And the other end of this is Black Legion being active in Venal, taking down super caps and capital ships up there. How far can goons really afford to go from home right now? And how long can they stay there without, say, dropping some of their Venal holdings to Black Legion, who are pressing them pretty hard right now with Retirement Club?
Goons seem pretty happy, I think, on the course they're on, judging just by, you know, things like their alliance updates. You know, they're definitely bleeding off cap ships, more cap ships than they want to, especially within the CFC as a whole. I mean, what, FCON lost 3 Titans, you know, this last week or whatever, and you can't really be doing that as you're kind of priming up the gears for war, so it seems.
There's also various different Russian factions have reformed and maybe coming back for catch, perhaps, so we might, in terms of Providence neighbors, start seeing some familiar faces in a new alliance.
Well, I mean, there's definitely been some shakeups already, and in terms of neighbors, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. Unclaimed Alliance lost a few member corps and quite a few members, actually, over allegations of personal use of alliance funds to purchase Titans, which probably the best way you could use alliance funds for personal use would be to buy Titans, I think. Stack Titans, when in doubt, stack Titans. Raiden has disbanded. They've scattered corps around. So Aquarius now looks like a pretty ripe apple coming off the tree.
Unclaimed has split and is now in the middle of a civil war.
Yeah. Talokan United, while that's W Space, they were, I'm pretty sure, the biggest W Space alliance out there. They've dissolved completely. Like we said, obviously, the HBC dissolved. You know, so there's a lot of shifting around. There's a lot of purging of inactives. Goonswarm's done it. Space Monkeys have done it. Test has not.
I've never seen Goonswarm purge inactives like that. They cut over 2,000 characters.
It's a stamp to war, isn't it? I mean, it's a stampede towards war, and that's one thing Tess has not done. They're still bloated at almost 12,000 members, so, you know, is that alliance battle ready? Can they get guys active and giving a shit about CTAs, you know?
Well, I think they're holding their own for now, but like I said, I expect the fighting in there to only intensify, and if their commitment to maintain that space and their fleet participation doesn't intensify that match, they're going to be shit out of luck.
So we're definitely seeing a shakeup. It'll be interesting to see where the new balance of power is, because I think Goonswarm specifically has hit the realization that there's a certain point as to how big they're going to get and still be effective. And I think that's kind of what that purge was they've realized what the point of diminishing returns was in terms of size, and now they just want to make that as battle-ready as possible. I mean, that's been their path for the last 6 months. Cap Swarm, you know, giving away cap from tech money and shit like that. They've been, you look back at all this in hindsight, and they've been preparing for war for 6 months. I think, anyways. I don't know. Maybe I'm just an asshole.
Very exciting times coming up.
Indeed. So, FCON, lol FCON, losing Titans.
Yeah, not a good week for FCON. They've lost 3 Titans. Just like, as much as some alliances lose in an entire year.
Also fairly different circumstances, but yet, I think all 3, in my opinion, were avoidable, which probably makes it 10 times worse.
I know the one definitely was. He was in the middle of a fleet up and decided to just go off on his own. He warped to the wrong beacon, didn't communicate where he was, turned out to be a shit fit as well. And so the fleet was looking around for him. Apparently they warped to the wrong pass. I don't know why they wouldn't warp to him. I guess he wasn't in the fleet anymore. I don't know what the deal is, but he basically died with an entire support fleet in system because he was all fucking around on his own and couldn't communicate his location in a timely
fashion. Tap it off, he was cap fit. So he wasn't, while that support fleet was warping around, he was taking a lot more damage than he necessarily needed to be taking.
And in our last piece of news, a bit of sad news to balance out all the joy we're feeling over dead super caps. Lost in Eve, Eve's longest running podcast, is no more. Jade Cougar put out his last episode recently. He really gave a heartfelt farewell to the fans and everyone that listened to him over the years. Gave shout-outs to the co-hosts that he's had over the years. If you're a fan of podcasting in general, just the Eve community, it's a good listen. Gonna miss Jade. Lost in Eve was probably the biggest Eve podcast that we've ever had. Certainly in length, if nothing else. Running jokes about how long it would be, but the fact is that it was widely loved and widely listened to. And Jade was a pioneer in the Eve podcasting community for a lot of reasons. Voices from the Void would not exist right now without him. Probably the current process of doing CSM debates and all that stuff would not exist without him. So we all owe Jade a lot, and we owe Lost in Eve a lot, and gonna miss them.
Pour some out, homies.
Yep. So now the most listened to podcast is, I believe, Crossing Zebras, and the oldest running podcast now falls to us. Decorations of War has been around for forever, pretty much. Like 4 years, so we just need to catch up to Crossing Zebras and episodes. They're unfortunately very fast. Which, ironically, not a quality that actual zebras have.
Wait, seriously?
Well, yeah. I mean, they're constantly being caught and killed.
I guess.
They're nature's prey. I've seen a documentary about it.
Fact, they are poor swimmers.
But yeah, shout out to our zebros in the audience. We need to come up with a cool catch name for our fans, too.
Warmongers.
Horrible people. Alright, before we move on to the CSM, or Allie's going to tell us all about Odyssey, I'm going to talk about another sponsor that we have. If you like Summer Blink, you'll like these guys. It's scovillescale.co.uk. That's scovillescale.co.uk. It's the newest lotto site in the Eve world. It is in-game browser compatible. The interface is really simple and easy, and you can do 2-ticket lotteries, up to 100-ticket instant lotteries, with really great prizes and achievements that you can unlock. And you can even set up 1v1 bets with people you know. Declarations of War listeners who open an account and deposit a minimum of 100 million ISK will get a refund of 20 million ISK. All you need to do is join the in-game channel, Scoville Scale, and mail one of the admins with the code Declarations of War Lotto Deal.
Very interesting name. If I didn't know any better, I'd think it was a troll or something.
Not a troll, I checked him out. It's the interface is actually, I like it a little bit better than Blink's. Just a wee bit.
Maybe they're trying to tell us their service is hot, hot, hot.
Alright, CSM coverage. Aliaris, take it away.
Alright, so the first month of CSM8's term has pretty much entirely been caught up with just Odyssey, Odyssey, Odyssey. The first week or two was transition stuff from CSM7, with you know, Alec was super helpful. Thank you very much for all of these CSM pro tips. But now we're all on our lonesome, and because CCP is releasing a new expansion, that's pretty much all that we've been doing has been testing out features, giving feedback on features, collecting player feedback on features, talking about the occasional sort of last minute thing. We had some input on the ship rebalancing. I wasn't as involved in that one because I don't fly a lot of battleship fleets. So mostly I've just been watching with interest as other people are commenting on and criticizing and suggesting things for the battleship rebalance. I'm certainly excited about some of the ships in there once I can get enough guys into battleships. But stuff that I've worked on mostly has been the hacking minigame, the probing system, and the sensor overlay. Of course, the CSM was a stakeholder on one team last for this release cycle, and that was CSM 7 for most of their tenure, and then the last little bit was turned over to us. I didn't realize it when this was explained, but stakeholder is actually a technical term for something as a part of agile development, which CCP uses. Basically, it's just the people who get to see the stuff that the team is coming out with and then comment on that stuff and get feedback back really quickly. So we did that. Anyways, we've given a lot of feedback stuff. We haven't yet gotten to work on anything really broad beyond just, well, how's this Odyssey feature going to work out? And I think we've been really, really helpful on that. We, like I said, gave a lot of feedback on the scanner overlay changes, and then the hacking minigame, me and Mina both spent a lot of time on Sissy just getting incredibly familiar with it and making comments as to what could go better.
Well, bottom line it for us, a lot of people have been complaining about some of the early states of the hacking game and the probing interface, which are, you know, exploration being the core of the Odyssey theme. Bottom line it, are the improvements that the community is looking for going to make it within a point release? And is this expansion going to be successful?
I think the expansion is going to be successful. I think most of the improvements the community was looking for are either in the expansion or confirmed to be in the point release. There's a couple of things that remain to be sticking points, but it's a lot better than it was when CSM8 took office. The hacking minigame in particular, the cans are now, you can click on a can, based on its name will tell you the kind of stuff that it has in it, so you don't have to click on the scraps containers to get, you know, possibly your faction POS BPC. So you can sort of sort out what kind of information, you can sort of sort out what kind of loot you're going to get out of that. Containers got easier to click on, you know, the minigame itself got rebalanced. And the ships got rebalanced based on player and CSM feedback.
Excellent.
I'm looking at Twitter right now. It seems like Bomber's Bar might have been bad phoned in by test. It's from a PL guy. He says we had good fights in NOL, but in Tech 1 Cruisers of all things. But Bomber's Bar bad phone saw them beat us out. So. There might be life for test yet.
Yeah, I'm looking at our kill board right now, and Joseph is in the Bomber's Bar fleet, one of our noobs. It was actually one of the Celestis pilots from that prior fight we were talking about. And yeah, there are Rupture kill mails just filling up the boards right now. Looks nice. Like members of PL and your votes don't count. Squishalish.
Yep. I like T1 cruiser fleets both because they're cheap, effective, and fun, and because they are incredibly easy and also fun to bond the ever-loving daylights out of, which my alliance has begun learning how to do. Well, been continually improving on doing.
Surprising number of different bomb types that they're using. I wonder how that's working out. We're going to have to get Joseph to tell us the secrets of what's going on down there. But I'm seeing Scorch, Concussion, and Shrapnel Bombs all in the same kill mails.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a multiple runs kind of deal? I can't think of any other way to get that.
Or maybe they were doing, like, four different points and just hitting the overlap. Which is an incredibly precise thing to be trying. Which, I don't know if the Bomber's Bar is that coordinated. But we'll have to talk to Joseph and see what's going on. Alright guys, we are going to wrap this up. The first two announcements, and then we'll close out. One is that to help Aliaris and CSM8 continue communicating with the player base, and also to bring a more interesting perspective to the podcast, given Noir's extended and storied relationship with Providence, which you can read at the Eve True Stories site. We'll be having her on as a third co-host with me and Ninja Turtle from now until she doesn't feel like it anymore.
Thank you very much.
And the other thing that I want to announce is a contest. There's a lot of fighting going on in Rahatalon between Eve University, Red vs. Blue, Brave Newbies, and a bunch of other people. And we want to offer 2 Plex to the person that can write the best battle report for things going on in Rahatalon. So send your battle reports from the Rahatalon conflict. We'll read the best 3 on air, and the winner is going to receive 2 Plexes. You can email your stories or link to them to Alexei of Card in-game.
I have one quick announcement, too. On behalf of Sunderbolt, who's kind of doing some PR stuff for us now, we have a Facebook competition going on. I guess you could call it that, contest maybe. Facebook.com/Noir Mercenary Group. If you like the page and leave a comment, you can win a Plex, maybe. So go check out that page for full details and to go see the page itself.
And that is it for 51. Go to declarationsofward.com to participate in our show poll. Leave a comment, put in a donation. This podcast is listener-supported, and your donations, the sponsorships, recurring donations, all help pay for hosting, editing, and cool things you hope to bring in the future, like this contest. You can reach Noir via our public channel, CafeNoir.com, and apply to join us or Noir Academy on our forums, www.noirmarks.com. Fly dangerous, guys.
My neighbor, welcome again to this neighborhood. I'd like to show you something. You know what this is? Well, maybe if I press this button. This is a cassette player with a little cassette in here, and there's nothing written on it, so we'll just have to play it to see what it is.
Do you ever imagine things?
Are they scary things?
Are they scary things? Do you ever imagine things? Things you'd like to have. Did you ever see a cat's eyes in the dark and wonder what they were? Did you ever pretend about things like that before? Did you ever grow anything in the garden of your mind? You can grow ideas in the garden of your mind. It's good to be curious about many things. You can think about things and make believe. All you have to do is think, and they'll grow. Imagine every person that you see is somewhat different, from every other person in the world. Some can do some things. Some can do others. Did you ever think of the many things you've learned to do? Did you ever grow anything in the garden of your mind? You can grow ideas in the garden of your mind. It's good to be curious about many things. You can think about things and make believe. All you have to do is think, and they'll grow. Did you feel like going like that? Let's give the fish some food. Mr. McFeely, I didn't order any whistle. That's what they call a slide whistle. Did you feel like going like that? There are so many things to learn about in this world. And so many people who can help us learn. Did you ever grow anything in the garden of your mind? You can grow ideas in the garden of your mind. It's good to be curious about many things. You can think about things and make believe. All you have to do is think. You can think about things and make believe. All you have to do is think, and they'll grow.